are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What's happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Thursday, November the 7th, and a blowout for a change. This is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, the sports writer here in Detroit City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and Associated Press, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, just like you guys, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Thanks for spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast, trying to get these episodes right when you get up in the morning for your commute to work or however else you consume the Locked On Pistons podcast. Today, we're going to talk about the Pistons getting the win, the blowout against the New York Knicks. We're going to run down the details. I'm going to give you my three biggest takeaways from the game. And later on, I'm going to rank my top five Pistons dunkers of all time. Maybe we'll take votes on this later or expand on our thinking about this, but kind of top of my head, my first impressions of my top five Pistons dunkers of all time. Of course, Christian Wood bringing that to mind as he's had a couple of highlight dunks of these last couple of games. But give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore for that, also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. But on Tuesday night, the Pistons get the win, move to 4-5 on the season with the 122-102 victory over the lowly New York Knicks, who move to 1-7 on the season. A lot of statistical highlights to talk about here. We'll start first with Tony Snell, 24 points. He was perfect from the field, 9 of 9, including 6 of 6 from three-point land. Andre Drummond was once again brilliant against a Knicks team that was without Mitchell Robinson for most of the game. He went out with being checked for a concussion, according to the New York Knicks. But Andre Drummond, a plus 24 on the night with 27 points, 12 rebounds, and 7 assists, 12 of 16 from the field, 3 of 4 from the free throw line. Good night for him. And the assists are the biggest team stat by far, 37 assists by the Detroit Pistons, the second most in the NBA for any team this season and the most for a Detroit Pistons team since 2010. Unbelievable there. Spreading it around, 2-7 apiece for Andre Drummond and Luke Kennard, 6 apiece for Langston Galloway and Bruce Brown. Not only that, but the turnovers, they ended up with 16, which is a pretty high number, but better than most of the time for the Pistons. But I think that a lot of them ended up being in garbage time. I might be wrong about that, but my hypothesis was that the turnover situation wasn't as bad. 4 for Andre Drummond, 3 apiece for Svi Mykhailiuk and Luke Kennard and Markieff Morris, who also had a really good game with 22 points, 4 of 7 from 3, 7 of 11 from the field as well. Julius Randle leading the way with 20 points for the New York Knicks, and Marcus Morris, former Piston, 18 points for his team. RJ Barrett, you know, you can see what the intrigue with him is. He had 15 points, has what looks like an NBA-ready body right away, looking good, and should be a nice player for that team. And I'm sure they'll figure out a way to squander it. But the Pistons, 15 of 30 from three-point land, putting up almost the amount of three-pointers that you'd want to see, and certainly another great percentage with 15 out of 30 there, 79.2% on free throws. Everything you want to see is good for the Pistons on this night. But, of course, the number one takeaway, and we'll get into it a little bit later, but the New York Knicks were the team they played, a team without Dennis Smith Jr. on this night, a team dealing with some more injuries as well, Reggie Bullock, an old friend there who did not play in this one, and a team that's just a mismatch of players who are too young to make a difference and players who are a little bit washed out, and just a bunch of power forwards that really are a mismatch of players. Like I said, Julius Randle, Marcus Morris coming over together this year in free agency. Mitchell Robinson, like I said, missing most of this game. A bright spot for this franchise, missing most of this game with concussion-like symptoms. Frankly, Ntilikina, despite brilliant defensive work throughout most of his young career so far, played 39 minutes and didn't make much of an impact on the offensive end with 11 points. Taj Gibson's washed. Iggy Brazdeikis, I don't see what David Fizdale's doing. With me, I would be putting guys like Iggy Brazdeikis out there more than he's getting. He got garbage time, 4 minutes. Why not throw him out there? I think the organization obviously is not on all the same page right now. Scott Perry's the guy who put this team together, and he's a former Detroit Pistons executive. But from James Dolan all the way down, you can see that this franchise is still a dumpster fire, and that's to be expected at this point. Bobby Portis coming off the bench. Wayne Ellington, former Piston, obviously last year, 0-4 from 3, 1-5 from the field. 2 points for him. He looks like he's, let's just be generous and say he's working his way into shape this year. But the Pistons get the win. And, hey, on this show, we kind of encourage the Pistons to play hard and get this done. And they did it. And we're not going to take a whole lot of great things away from beating the New York Knicks, even if it is a nice win, even if it is a convincing win. But, hey, you know, at this point, with the players the Pistons had out, Blake Griffin, Tim Frazier, Derrick Rose, Reggie Jackson, all the injuries that the Pistons have, there's no such thing as a ugly win at this point. There's no such thing. You got to get them while you can. And for the Pistons to be 4-5 through 9 games with all the injuries they've dealt with, not having their best player on the team step onto the court this season is a good thing, although we know that this is the soft part of the schedule and a full-strength Pistons team should be feasting on this schedule and getting off to a really nice start, and all they're doing is kind of staying above water. That's not to be critical. Guys like Andre Drummond, for the most part, and other guys like Bruce Brown lately, Luke Kennard most nights, and of the sort, Thon Maker, by the way, with some nice minutes in this game. Christian Wood playing well once again. Not a lot to complain about. Not pretty much anything to complain about at this point, but we'll see what happens when the real games start going once again. But like I said, we challenged him yesterday. We said Andre Drummond should come out here and dominate. He certainly did that, and we got to give some kudos to the Detroit Pistons for that. Coming up next, we've got the Indiana Pacers on the road. They're banged up once again. Obviously, Victor Oladipo continues to be out. Since the Pistons have seen them last, Edmund Sumner from Detroit Country Day went out with an injury, so he's unavailable for Friday. Miles Turner has been out, although there's a chance that he'll be back in this one. Sabonis ended up playing on Wednesday night, although there was a chance that he might not be able to go, so there's some injury issues there, although I expect him to play. But the Pacers at home get the win against the Washington Wizards. They are 4-4 and better than the Pistons right now, despite the fact that the Pistons have beaten them twice. So kind of up in the air as far as the red-letter games, but another red-letter game coming up, and the Pistons beat a bad team for the first time this season. They are now 1-3 against the, not quite dregs, but teams that are worse than red-letter games, beating the New York Knicks but losing games so far this season to the Atlanta Hawks, Chicago Bulls, and also to the Washington Wizards. But up next, we are going to talk about the three takeaways from tonight's game. But hey, you know what my favorite part about this time of year is? It's sweater weather, of course, and the leaves are on the ground. But more importantly, threes from downtown. That's right. For some, it's fall season. For the rest of us, it is ball season. Pro and college ball is tipping off, and there's no better way to feel part of the action than to have a stake in the game with mybookie.ag. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. NCAA is back in action, got Michigan State and Michigan. Michigan State's got to rebuild their resume. Down 1-0-1 so far this season. Got to climb the ladder back in the polls to get back to the number one spot. If you really want to support your team this season, don't just sit in the sidelines. Get in the game with mybookie.ag. If you join right now, mybookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate this offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
Yes, sir!
All right, a little bit later on, we're going to talk about dunking. I'm going to go off the top of my head with the 5 best dunkers in Pistons history, and I want to hear your lists as you listen to this on Thursday. But let's give the 3 takeaways from the game. We're going to start from the bottom and go with the most important at the end as we go along. Number one, and I tweeted about this, I thought it was a nice crowd. And again, I was not at this game. I was watching on television. But from some of the crowd shots I saw throughout the game, it looked like it was a pretty good crowd. It turns out the announced crowd was 15,463, so over 3/4 full at Little Caesars Arena. And I got a Duncan Smith, one of our favorite guys here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, the former host of Locked On Pistons podcast. He tweeted out a picture of pretty much a empty Little Caesars Arena right before tip-off, and you got to stop doing that. We got to stop tweeting out pictures at tip-off, because I'm telling you, if you've been to NBA games, even at arenas where rabid fans, not NBA finals games, but obviously run-of-the-mill NBA games, every arena appears empty at right about tip-off. It's not the time to take a representative picture at tip-off of the game, or, you know, a few minutes after halftime. I remember that Duncan did that in the home opener as well, and I believe Koo did that as well. And I'm not blaming Koo, because he's new to the being at all the games all the time, but it was just an interesting experiment, because those guys tweeted out the empty picture at the home arena saying, the home opener saying, how can this be the home opener crowd for Little Caesars Arena? Well, it turns out, when everyone got to their seats, it was actually about 85-90% full, and it wasn't one of those weird, inaccurate, unflated attendance numbers. That place was loud, and there was a lot of people there. It was reminiscent of, not quite like, but reminiscent of the playoff games when the Milwaukee Bucks were in town and this place was rocking at Little Caesars Arena. So if you're at the game, do not tweet out pictures that show a pretty much completely empty Little Caesars Arena at tip-off. Now, we know that if this team goes downward, and we know in the past that they've had really bad crowds at Little Caesars Arena, we're not ducking from the truth here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, but make sure it's an accurate representation of what's actually going on at Little Caesars Arena. Now, again, I was not there, and I'm judging from some of the baseline views where they showed the first deck to me. It looked like it was about, you know, 85, maybe less, probably more like 75% full, but that's pretty good. And it's not something to write home about, not something to brag about, but to show a pretty much empty Little Caesars Arena at tip-off at 7 o'clock on a school night is not exactly the most accurate representation, because we know if you've been to games, whether at the Palace or at Little Caesars Arena, it takes a while. You don't usually get to your seat by tip-off if you're coming from work, if you're maybe going somewhere to have some pops before the game, if you got to get the kids to wherever they got to get to, you got to stop by, get the souvenirs, get the hot dogs, get the craft beer, whatever you're doing as a fan, walking around Little Caesars Arena for the first time. I do believe that let's just kind of keep it on the level and show accurate representation of the crowd. And again, I'm acknowledging that there's been very bad crowds there the first 2 years of Little Caesars Arena, but let's not be inaccurate on how we describe it and how we chronicle it on Twitter, because, you know, that's going to get retweeted. It's going to be shown all over the place, and we're going to be thrown in the muck. I mean, from my watching the game on Monday of the Wizards Pistons games in Washington, D.C., it seemed like it was a really bad crowd there. From watching the games, it seemed like there wasn't much of a crowd when the Wizards even made plays. There wasn't a lot of cheering going on, but that wasn't the case on Wednesday night in downtown Detroit. Seems like the crowd was pretty good. I know they gave away at least 1,000 tickets to veterans, which was a cool thing to see. So I'm sure that inflates the numbers and inflates the in-game atmosphere a little bit better than maybe you would have imagined, or maybe is realistic, but still really good to see. Really nice to see the crowds picking up a little bit. Adam, one of our listeners, sent along some numbers showing that if you combine home and road percentage so far this season, the Pistons are actually last in the NBA in attendance right now. And I got back to Adam when he sent those along. I said, first of all, why would anyone care about road attendance? I mean, I understand that it shows that you're a draw or you're not a draw, but why should Detroit basketball fans care if at this point, we know we're not a draw around the NBA, but why should Detroit basketball fans care if we're filling up opposing arenas at this point? We know we're not going to, first of all. And if we've only had three road games, it pretty much depends more on if the road team that we're playing against packs their arena or not. So that's kind of my prerogative on that. And the second point I made to Adam, and I don't know that this is the one that's debatable, is I don't care as much about percentage of the arena being filled up as much as the total fans. I don't feel like Detroit basketball fans should be dinged by the fact that Little Caesars Arena at 20-plus thousand seats for an NBA basketball game is one of the largest in the NBA. So in my opinion, and again, this is something that we could split hairs about, if you think that, you know, on the flip side of this argument, if a team has a really small arena and they fill it up every night, should that fan base be dinged in what my calculations is? Again, kind of splitting hairs a little bit there. But I would look at, in terms of attendance numbers, average. Obviously, we're not going to look at total bulk numbers based on whether teams have played more home games or not. But average bulk number of fans that are at home games is what I'm more concerned about. And the Pistons are at number 24. And, of course, we're not going to throw a parade of having the 24th of 30 attendance-wise. But we're a team, as the Pistons, that have had five home games, so that's tied for the most of any team in the league at this point. So, you know, the gleam of the home opener has fallen off of the Pistons more than it has other teams in this 30-team list. So 24th, again, not – I'm not sitting here arguing that the Pistons fan base is back or that Little Caesars Arena is rocking every single night. Nothing like that. But at 16,557 fans, there are fan bases, like I said, the Sacramento Kings, the Washington Wizards, the Phoenix Suns, who are setting the world on fire, the Atlanta Hawks, the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Charlotte Hornets all have fans lower than the average of the Detroit Pistons, and some of those have played less games. So the challenge of filling up that arena has been less times than the Detroit Pistons, and they're not doing it as much as the Detroit Pistons are. So that's that. That's number one. Number two, a nice blowout win for the Detroit Pistons on Wednesday night against the New York Knicks. The first time this season that they won a game by 20 or more points. It's kind of an arbitrary number to throw out there as a quote-unquote blowout. I know that there are a lot of times that the losing team sneaks in and loses by 18 but was down by 30 at times. And I know that there are times when it's a really close game and for some reason the winning team goes on an 11-2 run at the end of the game to make it 20 points when it really wasn't as further along as the final score might have indicated. But I think it's important. I think it's important to get some rest for your main players, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But winning those blowout games is important, not only flexing your muscles across the league, but also getting those guys some rest. And the Pistons did not have a 20-point victory until February 4th of last year. And here we are sitting here on November 6th getting their first one. That first 20-point win was a home game against Denver. I know that because I was there and writing the AP Gamer for the Associated Press. And I know that that was the I took a lot of time researching this. There was probably a shortcut for smarter people than me on Basketball Reference, but I figured out that the Pistons were the last team to win a game by 20 points or more last season on February 4th. They ended up winning a few more than that, winning at Miami. I remember breaking out late in that game to push that deficit. I remember they won a game at Cleveland. I believe it was a Sunday afternoon game. I watched that game at the bar with some friends. And they just dominated the Cleveland Cavaliers from start to finish. A game at home against Chicago in March that they won by 20 or more. And then a game at Phoenix, which was the same night as one of the Michigan NCAA tournament games early on in March. And then the last game of the season at the Knicks was over a 20-point victory as well. So they ended up getting a fair amount of the 20-point-plus victories, but it's nice to see them get one of these off the bat. You need those. Good for load management, although my nitpick of Dwayne Casey is why is Luke Kennard and Andre Drummond both on the court in the last minute or two of this game? I know that Andre Drummond seems indestructible, and I know it's fun and cool to see him get 20-20 games and to possibly throw him towards a triple-double, but enough of that. With all the injuries of this team, the last thing we need is to be playing Andre Drummond for unnecessary minutes, and we're going to get burned on one of those. I did the same kind of complaint on Twitter in a game that Reggie Jackson ended up hurting himself on, so let's not do it anymore. And just an unbelievable thing to see for those guys to be out there late in the game. We don't need that, Dwayne Casey. Let's learn from our past mistakes and not do that anymore. My third and biggest takeaway, and you know what it is, it's the 37 assists, one off the franchise record, a great performance by the Bruce Browns, Andre Drummonds, Langston Galloways, and Luke Kennards of the world in that aspect. But like I said, this is the New York Knicks. We can't go crazy about this win or even how good it looked at times. 16 turnovers is too much, but like I said, I'm not going to look it up, but I have a feeling that a lot of those were late. But the 37 assists stands out. It's great. It's one off of a franchise record, and it's good to see for a Pistons team that has been struggling with ball handling, struggling with taking care of the basketball early on this season. But Indochino, it's the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. Up next, we are going to reveal my top five Pistons dunkers of all time. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. All right, and we are leaving Christian Wood off of this list for now because I want to keep him off the list, maybe be wowed a little bit more by him before we judge his whole body of work, maybe get a whole season as a Pistons player on here. But here's my off-the-cuff top five Pistons dunkers of all time. And, of course, when I say all time, you know it's my lifetime because I don't remember players before I was born, although I do have one old-school one that I don't remember a lot of them, but I do remember them happening during my lifetime and me being pretty excited. We'll get into that a little bit later. But the first honorable mention has to go to, of course, Joe Dumars. Joe Dumars? Dunker? Best dunker of all time? Yes, he dunked once. And I remember it was a big deal. It was late in his career, and I think the young guys, maybe the Stackhouses of the world, gave him some crap about it. So find that on YouTube and send it to me. But yes, Joe Dumars, if I recall correctly, dunked once in a game, and it was kind of a big deal that he did that. Some other guys that did not make my top five, but I like Jerry Stackhouse, a lot of great in-game dunks there. I remember he did some windmills as well. Maybe was in the slam dunk contest at one point. Allen Houston, I know, was in the slam dunk contest. He didn't make my list, but he did have one of the funniest slam dunk contest entries of all time. Check that out. It was in my mentions, but you can find it on YouTube. Allen Houston and dunk contest as a member. A rookie member of the Detroit Pistons. Young Andre Drummond belongs on there because he threw it down really hard in games. Also was a slam dunk contest participant. Didn't make my list, but honorable mention for sure. Blake Griffin, only because of his past pre-Pistons days, we'll put him honorable mention. The Big O on Orlando Woolridge, powerful dunker. I thought he was going to be a game changer when he came to the post-Bad Boys Pistons. He was not. Spoiler alert there. Tayshaun Prince was long. A lot of nice dunks as well. Didn't make my list. Ronald Dupree was another guy from the late part of the going to work era that had some dunks. Will Bynum during the dark ages. He had some nice dunks, which is great for a little guy. Mikey Moore. I remember being hyped a few times when he dunked when he was on the Pistons as the young teal days, the JYD era. Didn't have JYD in my honorable mention, but Jerome Williams might be a cause for mention as well. John Spider Sally from the Bad Boy days. Loved his dunks back in the day as well. And Jason Maxiel, one of the great power dunkers of the going-to-work era, end of the going-to-work era. Saw him at a Mongolian barbecue once, so that's my claim to fame about Jason Maxiel. But number five on my top five Pistons dunkers of all time off the top of my head is Ben Wallace. All the powerful putback dunks that he had. If this was a emphatic block shots list, he would probably be higher than that, but we'll give him some credit and put him number five on here. Number four for me is Flip Murray. And I know that Flip Murray had a lot of his best dunks before he became a Detroit Piston. I think with Cleveland he had a few of them. But I think coming off the bench, he had a great assortment of dunks during that era when the going-to-work era was kind of petering out a little bit there. But just a personal favorite of mine that might not really get onto many of your lists and maybe doesn't deserve it, but just holds a special place in my heart at number four. But number three, we're going with Duncan Darvin Ham. Broke the backboard at Texas Tech. This is a controversial pick because he might be number one on a lot of your lists. I would not argue with you guys if that was the case. And of course, his name is freaking Duncan Darvin Ham. So of course, you know he's great at slam dunks and probably should be higher on my list. But number two is a nickname that's even better than Duncan Darvin Ham. Possibly the best nickname in Pistons history, and that's Chocolate Thunder Daryl Dawkins. A little bit before my time, but yes, I do remember in the late 80s when he was on the Pistons, broke some backboards, and anytime some Piston is out there freaking breaking backboards, I'm all about it. It was from the late 80s, the cocaine era, and bad times for the NBA, and bad times for NBA rims when Chocolate Thunder Daryl Dawkins was in the house. And he made it happen and was a memorable Piston with that too. Dennis Rodman didn't make my list. We'll throw him on the honorable mention as list as well. Extended deep to have those dunks. Not very powerful, but looked funny as the worm did doing everything he did on the basketball court. But we'll put him on honorable mention. But my number one is Grant Hill, a finesse dunker, did it all. Highlight film stuff. Dunked powerfully over Alonzo Mourning in one of the great highlights of that era. And really one of the great highlights of Pistons basketball of all time, if we're being real about it. But just an outstanding athlete. Loved watching him play. Loved him throwing down the alley-oops as a rookie. I remember back in the red, white, and blue uniforms before they switched to the teal, he had kind of the alley-oop that was thrown behind his head that he still dunked. And I remember George Blaha on the radio going crazy about that one. So Grant Hill, always a special place in my heart as far as those dunks that he had. So what do you think? Send me on social media your list of the top five dunkers of all time. Let me know what you think, and we will revisit that list and those lists that you send me here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. That'll do it for us here on today's show. We'll look ahead to the weekend tomorrow, talking about Friday night's game in Indiana. The Pistons trying to go 3-0 against the Pacers so far this season. Almost at 500. Would be nice to get there with or without Blake Griffin. We'll have the latest updated information about the injury situation for the Pistons. Tim Frazier, Derrick Rose, Blake Griffin. Of course, Reggie Jackson will not be playing, but we will pass along what we know about those guys and if they'll be available this weekend. Talking more Pistons hoops here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. Thanks for listening. This is your host, Matt Shook, saying have a good night, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.